Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
Welcome to show 64 of On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And Sean, how would you like to be $115 million richer?
Man, $115 million richer. Are we talking about the Cincinnati Bengals and their marquee quarterback, $115 million? Was that 6 years?
Correct.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I would like to be $115 million richer. What a great contract that is.
Zero playoff wins gets you $115 million. Didn't Kaepernick get about 118?
Yeah.
So what in the world is a Super Bowl winning quarterback going to get next year in Seattle?
Oh, man, that's something that you will have to sweat out there. I mean, you know, again, this is that collective bargaining agreement starts to loom. And I'm sure that Russell Wilson is saying, man, this is an awesome, awesome thing that's happening. I can't wait until, you know, the end of the season to where I can get my contract taken care of. Gosh, I'm thinking somewhere, Sean, along the lines of, man, maybe $160 million for Russell Wilson. Is that possible?
Well, if you believe what Seattle's GM, John Schneider, has to say, they've got a plan in place and they know what they have to spend and what they can allot to that position. And they also understand how young Wilson is and the fact that he's already won a Super Bowl and the sky should be the limit for him.
Well, think about that. I mean, you're talking about Andy Dalton, who is, I mean, let's face it, he's a good quarterback. I wouldn't say that he's, you know, one of the marquee quarterbacks in the NFL, but he's a good quarterback. He's led his team to the playoffs. Unfortunately, they have lost, you know, in the playoffs, and there's a tremendous upside for Andy Dalton. I just don't know, you know, if $115 million is warranted or not.
Yeah, it's a lot of money to give somebody who, like I already said, hasn't given you even one playoff victory.
You know, and of course, you know, Cincinnati is one of those cities that has a tremendous upside. Of course, they have some great, great talent. Everything derives upon Andy Dalton doing an awesome job. And I believe that Cincinnati says that they're going to ride everything until the wheels fall off with Andy, which is a good thing for Cincinnati. Because, of course, you want to be able to trust in your quarterback. I just, again, I'm not sure that $115 million this early in his career is something that he has earned.
Well, the NFL got underway this past weekend with the Hall of Fame induction ceremony on Saturday and, of course, the Hall of Fame game on Sunday.
Of course, all the visions of grandeur starting out the preseason, and I think I was right along the lines with everybody else. I just wanted to get a taste of NFL football. I wanted to absorb everything that was the pregame, everything, you know, from the music playing all the way up to the first series. And of course, after the first couple of series, you start to see a lot of the younger players play. I think it was an actual pretty good game all in all, Sean. And you know, I mean, it's just, you know, again, after the smoke clears, it's still preseason.
Absolutely. And like you were saying, it's just a way for the fans and the players to reconnect, the players to get their feet wet, and some of those players trying to make the team for the, who'd we have? We had the Bills and
Bills and the Giants.
The yeah, New so York the, football Giants.
Yeah, so the Bills and the Giants playing. Of course, there are a lot of things happening, you know, in New York with, I believe, the Giants running back Wilson. I think it's Dan Wilson. Correct me if I'm wrong, Sean. But he got injured. David Wilson, thank you. And he was injured last year, and you know the injury lingered on so much to the point to where doctors told him that he had to retire. And so there is this big change in the running back situation in New York. And so, you know, I you just kind of hope for the best for these teams. And, you know, it looked like the New York Giants were standing pat there. They looked pretty good.
Yeah, some very bad reports came out on David Wilson today. They advised him to stop playing football as he's got back and vertebrae issues that could hamper him the rest of his life if he continues to play.
And that's a sad thing, you know, because he's a great, great individual, great young man, came in as a rookie last year doing some awesome things and expected to do even better this year. And to hear that news, I'm sure, is something that's devastating. But, you know, he had a great, you know, he thought about it and said, hey, you know, I'm life goes on for me. It's not the end of the world, which is something that's awesome. You always like to hear that from a player, even though they put their blood, sweat, and tears into playing such a tough sport and playing this sport all their lives. Of course, he says, man, this isn't the end of the world. And, you know, I have another chapter in my life that I'm going to look forward to. And so I got to tip my hat off to him for that.
And it just goes to show you, Sean, how quickly the end can be right in front of your face in the NFL. And the San Francisco 49ers of the NFC West, foes of the Seahawks, they're dropping like flies already in training camp, and they haven't even played one preseason game.
Yeah, what's the latest injury that's come out for the 49ers?
Dorsey on the D-line.
Yes.
Is done
yes.
for the year.
And so Dorsey, you know, who showed a lot of promise last year as a D-end and coming over in a trade. And, you know, he was supposed to have such an awesome year this upcoming year, having that injury. Of course, we talked about the running backs that have had injuries for the San Francisco 49ers. And, you know, it just seems like one after the other. But they continue to reload. And, you know, one of the things that the 49ers are going to look forward to is, of course, the opening of Levi's Stadium. I know that Jim Harbaugh he's in a contract year right now. Sounds like there's a little bit of frustration going on between the front office and Jim Harbaugh to where they're not going to talk about these things until the end of the year. And that's something to watch as well. So, you know, though it looks like San Francisco made some right moves as far as strengthening up their wide receiver core and adding a piece here and adding a piece there, there are some little, you know, there's some things that are happening in their organization at the same time that are causing them to not look like that team that's going to compete, you know, for the NFC West.
Well, they already have turmoil, and it's very, very early, so it'll be interesting to see how they deal with that turmoil and whether or not they can overcome those injuries. Not only that, but the contract talks that have stalled with head coach Harbaugh.
And that's a bigger thing, Sean, I think, is, you know, the contract talks. You know, as a coach, you want to feel like you belong. And I believe Jim Harbaugh is, for whatever reason, there is a disconnect between he and the front office. I think it would be horrible to let go of such a great prodigy that is Jim Harbaugh. I think he's one of the better coaches in the NFL. And if I'm an owner, if I'm a GM, I'm thinking whatever these differences are, we have to fix them. Because, again, before Jim Harbaugh came to San Francisco, we were an average team or below average team looking for some glimmer of hope. And so I hope that the front office sees that and moves forward and gives Jim Harbaugh the contract that he deserves.
It's time to get on out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big-time guest number one tonight, and that is John White, former professional basketball player and Grassroots Training Academy founder, as well as a basketball scout with Global Basketball. John, thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, glad to be here, man. Glad to be here.
John, one of the interesting things about you is you're a former Ballard High School standout up in Seattle. And so, you know, that's great. You know, always great to have a Pacific Northwest superstar that comes out and does some great things. You played at Louisville and also at Southern Miss. But the biggest thing is playing overseas. And we've had some guests on our show that have played overseas. And you do some things with Daryl Reese in global basketball. Tell us what kind of structure you're doing as a scout with global basketball.
Now, what me and Daryl like to do is, man, we like to bring the two entities together of scouts, coaches, and GMs from overseas and let them see the talent that is here in the United States. A lot of it is untapped talent. And Daryl's done a great job of bringing these guys together from his 15 years of being an agent in the agency business and his contacts of knowing, you know, GMs and coaches and agents as well, to come to this one place in Vegas like we've done the last few years and put on a good event, man. And he does it very well. He has the NBA officials involved. And it's a great showcase, man. A lot of guys get jobs, and a lot of guys got jobs this past season.
Now, John, one of the things that I'm learning as far as a broadcaster is concerned is some of the great things that are going on over in Europe, and you've played with a numerous amount of teams. I believe you played in England, France, and Cyprus, and Austria. You know, you can make an honest living from playing in European basketball. Kind of give our listeners an idea on what it's like to survive. And, you know, for people who watch NBA, they think that that's the only thing that, you know, that transpires. But there's actually a great, great life playing overseas.
Yes, you can earn a great living playing basketball in Europe. A lot of people like myself, even when I first came out of college, it was kind of unheard of for me. My college roommate, good friend of mine, Derek Hamilton, he went to Venezuela after he got cut by New Jersey and after I got cut by Indiana, and he called me up and said, "Hey, man, you want to come to Venezuela and play some basketball?" I said, "What I got to do?" And I didn't even have a passport at the time. And he said, "You got a passport?" I said, "No, I don't." I called home. My aunt, she worked at the governor's office, had my passport in 3 days, and I was gone to Venezuela. Man, they fly you over. They put us up in a nice apartment hotel downtown, pay for our meals, and we had a chauffeur. You know, so you're living like a king over there, man. You're making tax-free cash money in some countries in South America. Likewise in Europe, you know, you don't have any expenses other than your food and your phone. Your housing is paid for, your car is paid for. Basically, and in some countries, some of your meals are paid for. So basically, all you can do, you can save a lot of your money because you don't have a lot of expenses. As long as you don't party too hard and spend all your money on phone bills, you save a lot of your money.
Now, John, what sort of culture shock and adjustment period was there when you first left the United States to play basketball?
Oh, man. My first job in Europe was in Graz, G-R-A-Z, Graz, Austria. And when I got there, I'm telling you, man, a friend of mine, a real good friend of mine named Reinhard Eibel, who also came to the global event, helped get me over there. And we would go down to the town center and walk around. And I tell you the truth, man, people had never seen a tall black guy before. And they would stop and stare at me like I was a phenomenon. And I was like, "Hey, Reinhard, man, why are they looking at me like that?" He said, "They never seen a black guy that tall before, let alone a black guy." I was like, "Are you serious?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Man, it kind of blew my mind." And, you know, from that point on, I started realizing, you know, where I was and how I had to conduct myself and you know, just started learning about the culture and trying to learn to speak the language. At that time, on my first job, I didn't have a job. I didn't have a car. So I caught the bus. I rode the tram. Then I walked 2 blocks to practice. That went on for the first month. And then after the season got started, We started winning some games, and the coach said, hey, we got to get this guy a car, and I got a car. And, you know, from that point on, you know, the rest was pretty much easy over in Austria. But that first month, man, I was ready to go home. I didn't have any, like now, you know, you got the internet, Skype, and all that stuff. Man, I had one station in English, and that was CNN. That was it. Everything else was, you know, television was in German. There were no American subtitles. And, I mean, homesick was at its highest level. And then I ran into a good friend of mine, another American named Francis Fletcher. And we started to hang out, and you know, it made my transition a little bit easier. And then the season started, and some of the guys, some of the national guys, the Austrian guys spoke English and made some new friends. And then after a while, it got real easy after that.
John, looking back at that time when you were homesick and, like you said, didn't have the internet and maybe thought of going back home and going where you were comfortable, how glad are you now that you stuck it out, you persevered, and you moved forward?
Oh, man, it was the best decision I made. It was the best decision that I made. And I kind of had the same experience in college, man. And my dad, my freshman year at Southern Miss, man, we went 7-21, and I wasn't playing that much, and I was frustrated. I was ready to transfer, and my dad, you know, told me to, hey, man, stick it out. You know, you made that decision, you know, stick it out and live with your decision. And, you know, it was part of growing up, and that carried over to when I got to Europe. You know, I thought about that when I was there. I was like, no, man, I'm going to stick this out. It's something that I wanted to do. I love playing basketball. And it was the best thing to happen to me, man. I got to see another side of the world, other sides of the world that I, you know, wouldn't have seen otherwise for free, basically. Met a lot of nice and interesting people, been to a lot of interesting places. So I got to basically see the world for free, and I wouldn't trade anything for it.
John White Jr. joining us here on The Double. And John, you've mentioned, you know, just being over in Europe and in South America, learning different languages, how tough was that? I mean, was there a point to where you said, you know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do, or do you just kind of stay in your own little circle? Is there a group of Americans that you talk to on a consistent basis? What was it like going through that adjustment?
Well, you know, thank God it was a lot of people at different places where I went. That could speak English. You know, almost every team that I went to, they had one or two guys on the team, because some of the countries, they had to learn English in school, so some of the guys, you know, knew how to speak English. So that helped a lot. You know, sometimes, you know, there was a little difficulty in understanding certain things sometimes, but one of the first things I used to learn when I got overseas was to learn how to order my food and ask, where is my money?
Yeah, you have to know how to ask that. Yeah. That's probably the most universal language that we could possibly have, is the monetary exchange. You'd mentioned one other thing, John, is that, you know, people looked at you and they said, wow, they never seen an African-American, you know, person, let alone somebody who's, and for those of you who don't know, John, you're, what, about 6'7"?
Yes.
And so 6'7", and I would say that your game is probably the most similar to Steve Smith. Have you heard that comparison before?
I've heard that before.
You have a dynamic shot. Call you Mr. Clutch. You have to have the ball. So something tells me, you know, that adversity, through all of that adversity, there's a lot of concentration for you, which helped develop your game, you know, and your career.
Oh, yes. It definitely you know, being in certain situations, man, I remember playing in Caracas, Venezuela, man. This is the truth, man. We got to the arena, and it was a 12-foot chain-link fence around the court. And when we got to the, you know, got ready to warm up, I asked one of the guys, I said, man, why they got this fence up around the court? And he said, you'll see when the game starts. And the game got started, man. These fans was climbing the fence, man. They was beer bottles on the floor, man. I mean, I thought I was in third world medieval times.
Rutgers in Europe.
Yes. Yes, man. But, you know, at that time, man, I was too young and full of, you know, life, and I relished the challenge, man. And when I got on that basketball court, it was my safe haven, man. I could block out anything that was going on, and in some of those instances, it made me turn my game up even higher. So, you know, that was one of the things that, you know, some players would shy away from it, but I love being that guy to, you know, hit that three-pointer to make that home crowd, you know, sit down and shut up. So it was one of those things that fueled me. I loved it.
John White joining us here. And, John, your grassroots training academy, what do you try to teach these young kids and young athletes of today?
That hard work pays off. You know, I have some kids that have dreams and aspirations of playing major D1 college basketball, and I ask them, how do you think, you know, that happens? You just don't walk out here and it happens. You have to work. And the name of my company is Grassroots Academy Training with the Pros. And so I train them like pros. We work out before we work out. Then, you know, building muscle, getting them to build their body up, take care of their body, eating right, teaching them the fundamentals of the game. And you know, like nowadays, you know, everything with the flash and everybody's trying to, you know, cross you over and make you fall down and all that stuff. That has nothing. I tell these kids, I said, watch San Antonio Spurs play basketball. Watch a great team play with movement, ball movement, and have the right personnel on the floor and being able to shoot the basketball. I said, shooting is the most important aspect of basketball. One of my old coaches said, if you can shoot, you can play. So I really focus on the shooting aspect, getting the fundamentals of shooting, you know, keeping your elbow up, follow through, let the ball roll off the three fingers, your feet, your footwork, and, you know, how to come off screens correctly. And a lot of these things, some of these kids and some of these coaches are not teaching some of these kids how to do these things. So that's what I really focus on. I try to teach them the basic fundamentals of how to play the game of basketball.
How is that similar or different to what you taught a few weeks ago last month at the Global Basketball Summer League?
In some instances, it's real similar. Like some of those guys that are already on that level, you know, you can see some of the weaknesses that they have. But I try to tell a lot of guys, you know, when you come to these type of events, you've had to have been working out, and you have to be in condition, and you've had to get up a lot of shots. Because when you're in an event like this, you're not going to get a lot of shots. So your efficiency is very important. If you get 10 shots, you need to go 6 for 10 or 5 for 10. If you go to the free throw line, you need to go 6 times. You need to go 5 for 6 or 6 for 6. You know, the concentration level and the focus that you have to be a professional player is consistently night out, night in and night out. You know, there are no off nights. You can't come one night and have 30 and the next night have 5. You know, they'd be ready to send you home. Put him on a plane. He's gone. You know, you have to keep your consistency, and that's why I try to teach these young guys, is be consistent. Every night you step on the floor, be consistent. Be a factor on the floor. You know, I tell guys about the stat line. You know, when I play, my stat line would be 25, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals. Try to have 2 or less turnovers. And if you play a lot of minutes, you're gonna have turnovers. But you always try to keep your stat line the same every night. Get what you're going to give a team every night. And the consistency part of it is big. And knowing your coach's offense. I've seen guys get cut because they could not run the coach's offense. And in Europe, those coaches are big on running, making sure that you run their system. And if you can't run it, you can be the most talented guy. But if you don't know and can pick up and think on your feet, if I call a timeout, what I do with some of my guys, I'll call a timeout and I'll draw something up right there on the spot and see if they can go out on the court and execute. And as pros, you have to be able to do that. So it's really kind of the same, but at another level.
Now, John, you teach the middle school and the high school, so you have eighth grade AAU. You also have high school, and the price varies from probably around $350 to $500, if I'm correct. If I'm a parent and I want my child to participate in the grassroots organization, what separates you and your teaching from, let's say, some of the other former players or coaches that are doing the same thing?
That's a good question. I would say the detail that I pay attention to when I'm working. I like to train my teams, and then we go play. And then things that we work on while we're training, I let them do them in the games. And I tell the guys all the time and the girls, there's no sense of training and working on these type of movements coming off screens. And when we get to the game, you don't utilize them. So you're wasting my time and money, and you're wasting your parents' time and money. If you're not going to apply what we've learned in our training sessions out on the court, you're wasting time. And so I think that kind of separates me, because I train them and then I go coach them and teach them the game. Teach them how to come off a pick and roll, so to speak. Teach them how to defend the pick and roll. Man-to-man philosophy, team defense philosophy. That type of stuff. I really try to teach them the game all the way around, in working in skill development and in team concepts.
John White, thank you so much for your time tonight. Pleasure getting to meet you in Las Vegas at the Global Basketball Summer League. And if you want more information on the Grassroots Training Academy, jwwhitejr.com. John, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, man. Been a pleasure.
There goes John White down in the greater Atlanta area. Lots of insight on professional basketball and how to make it.
Yeah, one of the things, Sean, that I didn't allow John to talk about was when I mentioned the price of his camp. It goes from the middle of July to October. And so when you're thinking about that, you know, $350 to $500, that's nothing when you're looking at the span of the camp, and I believe it's twice a week. So yeah, definitely go to jwwhitejr.com for more information. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have a guest number two, Greg Talbot of KNDU TV. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah.
Cause you're burning with the brush flame. Yeah. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 64. And let's go right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and go across the street here in the Tri-Cities over to Kennewick. And welcome in big-time guest number two, Greg Talbot of KNDU TV, sports anchor. Greg, thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it. Nothing else to do before 11 o'clock, and why not talk some good local sports, huh?
Most definitely. And, of course, Greg, you know, during the break, we were getting a chance to talk a little bit about your roots and where you're from. So, of course, connecting the Pacific Northwest and Northern California, you are from the city, my friend. And so, of course, welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express.
Hey. Yeah, thank you guys so much. Obviously, a good Giants win today, speaking to the city, and a good season coming up for the 49ers. But I'll tell you what, it gets a little dicey when people find out that I'm a 49ers fan up here in deep Seahawks territory. I always fear for my safety.
Well, hey, we won't hold that against you, no doubt. But, you know, you've started out in your career as a, you know, of course, you are a sports broadcaster, and you've done some broadcasting with the River City Rascals baseball team in Missouri. Of course, your Eastern Washington ties with the Eastern Washington University, Whitworth, paying your dues, and now as a sportscaster, kind of give us an idea on what your run has been like up to this point.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, it's been a lot of fun. I'm coming in on about a year here at KNDU TV in the Tri-Cities, but I started broadcasting sports like a lot of guys, you know, my age are now able to do back in high school. I got started when I was 15 when we moved to Lake Oswego, Oregon, my family, and my high school, Lake Oswego High School, had a sports broadcasting program that has produced a couple of big-name guys. John Strong, who's now the voice of Major League Soccer on NBC Sports, he was the guy that started the program. So I got to do all kinds of sports broadcasting in high school, and then by the time I got to Gonzaga University, I was having so much fun and doing what I loved that I just kind of went off campus. I did games for Whitworth. I did games for Eastern Washington. You know, every summer went to do baseball in a different part of the country. So as you guys obviously know, I think you probably agree that sports broadcasting is far and away the most fun career there is, and the fact that I got to start at a pretty early age just made it all the better.
And that's my next question. Of course, you starting at an early age, when people listen to you and when people talk to you, and of course, you know, having this conversation now, you command a strong presence as far as your delivery is concerned. You know, was that something that's been automatic, or is that something that you've worked on over the years?
Well, I would say part of that is the fact that I come from a play-by-play background. I'm doing TV right now, of course, for KNDO and KNDU and the Tri-Cities in Yakima. But I come from the play-by-play world. Even in college, I never thought that I would end up doing TV. And you know, when you do play-by-play, as I know Sean Wally can tell you, he's a play-by-play guy in a lot of ways in his own right. You always are trying to strike the right presence between approachability and conversation, and then you know a certain amount of authority so people can trust what you're saying, and you know, just the way you command the tempo of a game. So part of it is the fact that you have to work on it, but a lot of it is the fact that I just did so much. I mean, like I said, I started when I was 15, and I've never really stopped. So it's just something that I've always gotten a chance to work on, and I'm glad you guys can't tell I'm 23. That's very flattering. Thank you.
Greg, who have been some of your mentors and guys you've leaned on for some guidance and assistance as you're starting your career?
Oh, so many guys that are just the most wonderful mentors, and I'm sure you guys have found the same thing. Even guys at the top that are very well known, they are still always willing to take time and help guys out because, as they always say, they used to be you. Some of my favorite, most helpful mentors, like I said, John Strong, who's now the voice of Major League Soccer on NBC, he's been a great mentor of mine because he started the high school program that I kind of cut my teeth at back in Oregon. A guy that I always lean on is Ted Robinson. He's the voice of the San Francisco 49ers. He used to do Giants games in the Bay Area. He, of course, is the voice of Wimbledon on NBC and a lot of the major tennis opens. He's fantastic. Greg Amsinger, the lead host of the MLB Network, and too many other guys that are just very valuable and you know always willing to help, especially for a young guy that knows what he wants to do. It's always amazing when you can find worthwhile mentors to help you out and critique your work, because like I said, they used to be you. So if you can find a mentor that is willing to help you out, there is no better asset you can have as a young sports broadcaster.
Greg Talbot with us of KNDU TV in Kennewick. Greg, what has been your highest, most memorable moment for you so far in your early career?
I got to tell you what, it's really funny that you're going to believe I'm going to say this, but I actually got to take you all the way back to high school. When I was doing my own high school's games on our internet sports broadcasting channel in Lake Oswego, I must have been 17 or 18, and our football team, the Lake Oswego Lakers, they made the state championship football game, and we were just, you know, like we said, these 17, 18-year-old kids, and we got to go have our own press box at Research Stadium on the campus of Oregon State University at their football field for the big game. And, again, just being a high schooler, having our own booth and having our own replay monitors in front of us, it was just the most wild thing. And I've done a ton of fun things since then.
Greg Talbot joining us here on The Double. And, Greg, that's great. You know, that's awesome that you'd mentioned, you know, going back to the high school career and, you know, getting a chance to call a game at Research Stadium. Isn't it something that you always look for, that, you know, that feeling or that next rung, that next step? And when you actually get a chance to feel it, you know, you want to make sure that you're putting out your best mark. And of course, you know, that is just incredible, you know, in itself, you know, getting a chance to, you know, at that early of an age, calling a game at one of the big collegiate stadiums.
Well, it was, like I said, it was one of the coolest things I'd done still in my life to this point. But you're totally right about wanting to put out your best work when you get to the next stage. I'm actually doing a big minor league baseball game for our parent station, KHQ in Spokane. We're doing a Spokane Indians game next weekend, and the main sports broadcaster at KHQ, Sam Adams, is on vacation. So they're having me call the big minor league baseball game with probably a couple thousand people watching, and I did one a month ago, but it's still, I think you guys can agree, it's still nerve-wracking when you do reach that next rung to make sure you're putting your best foot forward.
And of course, you know, being a sports broadcaster, it seems like you're willing and up for the task for whatever sport that comes up, and you just worked and did your first Columbia Cup, I understand, and how was that?
Yes, sir. I'll tell you what, that was wild, especially since KNDU is the official station of the Columbia Cup. Our station had a couple hours live on Friday. We had our own live sports show on Friday, plus the live races. And then our station went live from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. down at the Columbia Cup on the water all of Sunday at the Columbia Cup. So it was just something. Not only did we have our whole sports department committed to it, we had literally everyone besides two people in our whole news operation committed to bringing all this live coverage to fans in the Tri-City line too. So to see the amount of effort that goes into it from KNDU to put out such a great production, it was wildly impressive. And I got to tell you, just being down there on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on the river, I couldn't get enough of it. I loved it.
Now, Greg, what sort of preparation do you put in for your play-by-play on SWX, maybe some hydro coverage? How much prep time do you take per broadcast?
Well, that completely depends on the sport. Like I said, I'm doing the Spokane Indians baseball game coming up this Friday. And for a baseball game, when you're not doing the team's broadcasts every day, you're going to prep just as much as you do for a football game, which is just about probably 3 or 4 hours. When we get into football broadcasts this fall on SWX, even just for an average Friday night football game, you know, between making your spotting boards and talking to the coaches and talking to the players and making sure you have all your storylines straight, you know, dealing with the crew and the color commentary, there are guys, I'm sure you guys can agree and know, that don't show up a lot of preparation. But ideally, you're putting in a couple really solid hours of prep, so by the time the game gets to be 48-0 in the third quarter, you can still try to keep the broadcast entertaining.
Greg Talbot, kind enough to join us here on The Double with the Double S Express. And, of course, Greg, you've also had the chance to call some football. And, of course, I believe Eastern Washington University, were you able to call football there, or was it just basketball?
Well, I wish. I got the chance as a junior and senior to come on as the voice of their women's basketball and volleyball teams. But I'll tell you what, calling an Eastern game would be such a thrill one day, because even though they are thought of as kind of second citizens in Spokane, behind Washington State and Gonzaga University, Eastern Washington football games are just wild. The Inferno is so much fun, and if anybody out there hasn't had a chance to go, if you're ever in the Spokane area, make the time one Saturday. It is just a fun, wild atmosphere.
I have definitely frequented Cheney quite a bit, of course, going to school there, and I didn't get a chance to partake in the Red Field, but it looks like it is just a crazy atmosphere, and I definitely look forward to getting back up there sometime soon.
Oh, dude, it's the most fun thing. You got to find a time to get up here.
Greg, what was it like going back to the Midwest when you did minor league baseball? I mean, you went from Gonzaga and calling games at Eastern, and now you're doing small market, single A, double A, rookie league ball. Was it a huge change? Was it a big drop off from what you were used to?
Well, luckily for me last summer, I had actually worked in the league a couple of the years before. Even starting going back to my freshman year at Gonzaga, every summer I went somewhere different. So after my freshman year, I went to Bellingham, Washington, and after my sophomore year, Battle Creek, Michigan, to go do summer collegiate baseball games. And after two summers in the summer collegiate ranks, I kind of figured that it was, you know, time to make the jump to the minor league level. So the summer after that, I went to Joliet, Illinois, to broadcast for the Slammers, who are in the same league as the Rascals. So by the time I got the jump to River City right after I graduated from Gonzaga, it was something I was kind of used to. Compared to other small single-A baseball leagues, the Frontier League is just as nice or cruddy as any of them, depends on what you think. But I'll tell you what, it is very different. I loved it. Some people can't stand working 90 games in 95 days. I loved it. The fact that you're getting up and going to work literally every day just to talk about baseball, there might not be a more fantastic job in the country.
And, of course, Greg, you know, you're mentioning, you know, calling games, calling baseball games, and being a sports director. Do you find that there are two different hats that you wear, or are you going into the game plan the same as a director as you would as a broadcaster?
Oh, well, I haven't actually gotten a chance to direct games on TV, but what I can tell you that is going in to a game as a sports anchor and then as a play-by-play broadcaster are two completely different things. It actually kind of confuses me so much of the time when teams will just hire a local TV sports broadcaster to do play-by-play, assuming that they are just because you can do one, you can do the other. I think both you guys can preach this. Play-by-play is a completely different monster than radio and TV. It's a totally different discipline. But you know, going in as a play-by-play broadcaster when you're covering a game, your goal is to, you know, if it's a 48-minute football game, you're going in to cover all 48 minutes, every play as good as you can, and you're calling the game itself as a sports anchor. You go in there and you are watching every play, dissecting what it is, the important things that you can show between 30 and 45 seconds that can give the fans watching at home the flavor of the entire game that they missed.
Greg Talbot of KNDU and SWX TV, thank you so much for your time tonight. You can follow him on Twitter at Greg Talbot. Have a wonderful night, and definitely if you're in the Tri-City area, watch him on KNDU NBC right now.
Thank you so much, guys. Glad to join you.
There goes Greg Talbot from Kennewick, Washington. Lots of insight on how to make it in the sports broadcasting world, and he's doing some great things at a young age of 23.
Man, you're right, Sean, at a young age, and, you know, what a breath of fresh air that Greg is. He's almost like that shot of espresso in the morning when you get a chance to talk with him. It seems like he's on, he's tactful, he knows exactly what he's talking about, and his knowledge at this age is just tremendous. I look forward to some great things happening for him in the future.
And one thing we didn't get a chance to touch on is they at KNDU just scored a new television production truck, Mr. Boyd, that I'm sure you and I would be somewhat familiar with from all the freelance work we've done, and they're looking to use that here in the fall, starting with football. So some potential for even better productions coming out of the KNDU SWX sports staff.
Just means things are growing in the Tri-Cities, means more work, and of course that's always good when you're trying to survive and make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to see that a small market TV station is doing things to improve and make things better.
Yeah. And, you know, again, with a talent like Greg, and we didn't get a chance to talk about the STAA and our ties there, but that's okay. We're going to take another quick break and come back and we'll talk all things sports. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Likes the inconvenience of car repairs. Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. And the world's gonna know your name.
Cause you burn with the brush flame. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd alongside Sean Wally, show number 64. We are moving right along. Two great guests so far, John White Jr. of the European Basketball League and Global Basketball, and then our second guest, Greg Talbot of KNDU in the Tri-Cities. Sean Wally, been a great show thus far.
64. Holy smoke. Seems like just yesterday we got started.
Yeah, you know, it does. It seems like, you know, just yesterday. But, you know, along the lines, I think we've had some awesome guests, and today is, you know, pretty much the same. Two awesome guests. I love sitting and talking with Greg Talbot, getting to know some of the things that he has gone through to get to where he's at. And of course, he's not done, you know, calling some minor league baseball. And I'm sure that, you know, he has some aspirations of moving on, but of course, also being at the sports desk at KNDU.
Absolutely. It's got to be a job that doesn't feel like a day of work. I know that's how you and I would feel.
Yeah, living the dream, definitely living the dream. Of course, you and I look forward to those days to where we're getting our itinerary and we're living out of a suitcase, you know, day in and day out, and, you know, living the dream of, you know, calling for professional sports. One of the other things that, you know, that Sean, that you and I talk about as well is putting in those dues and paying those dues, and that's what Greg was talking about, is paying those dues early, understanding and perfecting your craft. And, you know, he mentioned one of the things is, you know, as far as high school, going back to, you know, a fond memory and calling a game at Reser Stadium. That'd have been a great feeling. Of course, Reser Stadium, where the Oregon State Beavers play. And I think their stadium seats, what, about 60, maybe about 64,000. So I'm not sure if the house was packed, but just that feeling of getting a chance to call a game has to get you excited.
Oh, definitely. That would be one of the things that would build that dream and give you an idea of what it was like on that large of a stage, even though it was a high school game and the place was probably 3/4 empty. But at the same time, you're there. You're in that same press box. It's that same field, the same locker rooms that are used in major college football.
You know, Sean, a lot of times we talk about, you know, basketball and football. We never really talk about the preparation going into baseball. And when Greg's talking about calling minor league games, there has to be an awesome feel about coming to the ballpark, looking out, the smell of the grass, you know, the pregame, you know, festivities and everything that is our national pastime. Has to be a great feeling as well, calling minor league baseball. one of the other things that, you know, we talk about as well, you know, with Greg is, you know, that chance to, you know, make your mark, put those things and make them solid. And I know, Sean, I believe you're back. Bear with us, Sean, dropping in and out on us. But I mean, you know, those things that are, that you prepare to, you know, for perfection, you know, I know that, you know, Greg was mentioning those as well. And, you know, having the adjustments like you and I are with dropping in and out of our calls as well. Those are things that we have to go through to get sharper, to get better.
The drop sync boys, as studio engineer Don Newsom affectionately called us a few weeks back. And yeah, you know, from hearing what Greg had to say, Sean, it sounded a lot like his preparation follows a lot of the lines that we see with the major networks. You know, he was talking player cards and shot sheets and things like that. And those are the things we see at the highest levels.
And dare I say that he's taken a page out of Super Bowl champion quarterback Russell Wilson, that the separation is in the preparation. And of course, I'm sure he's right along the lines of those as well. And of course, John White Jr., had, you know, talking with him earlier in the broadcast and getting a chance to understand what his temperament was as far as, you know, not only teaching today's youth, but living by the example as a player. One of those things is playing in Europe and South America and traveling all around and understanding that this was going to be his career. You know, it may not have been at the grand marquee stage, you know, playing in front of 20,000, 30,000 in the NBA, but he definitely made his mark in European basketball being called Mr. Clutch. And I'm sure those are, you know, some of the things that he can recall as well, you know, in his career. And of course, doing some things with Daryl Reshov, Global Basketball. Of course, these guys are doing an awesome job with summer basketball down in Vegas, you know, giving people the chance to, giving players the chance to continue their careers and possibly making it to the next level. I just wish and know that nothing but the best will happen for John White and his endeavors as well. One of the let's shift gears here and wait for Sean to get back. Sorry for the technical difficulties, but of course there's some things that have been going on outside of our guests that have been on the double with the Double S Express, and we can talk about what happened in the NBA over the past week. And of course, our U.S. basketball team preparing for the world championships. And there was a huge, huge injury, Sean Wally, that happened. And, you know, Paul George, you know, we can only wish him the best. Went down with it looks like a season ending injury, but you never know with these things. Sometimes players can come back within 6 to 8 months.
It was just a gruesome, gruesome injury. You know, Paul George on defense, and maybe the worst thing is it was just a scrimmage against his own teammates, and his right leg planted.
Yeah, planted, I believe, you know, just at the base of the, you know, the basketball standard, which one of the things, Sean, that puzzles me, and maybe I need to do a little bit more research in this, on how close the goal was, or how close that standard was to the floor. And if it was NBA regulation, I believe that's that standard, that base that holds the hoop, connects the hoop to with the base, was probably about 3 feet closer. And if it was where it was supposed to be in the NBA, then this injury doesn't happen. And so that's just, you know, that's a terrible thing that happened with Paul George. And, you know, again, you know, you never want to see those types of things. Of course, Derrick Rose getting his chance and his debut to play and, you know, getting a chance to show what he can do, did some awesome things. And, you know, he showed that, you know, we should look forward to him having an excellent season this year. But you kind of have to wonder, you know, with Derek coming back from this injury and getting to see what happened with Paul George, if that's not going to be something that will linger with him going into the regular season.
You know, Sean, one of the things that has been told today from Las Vegas and the hospital, when coaches went to see Paul, he was the most upbeat one of the group. You know, the mood was very somber. They were all upset, sad, what have you. Yet Paul George was the one saying, I'll be all right. I'll be back. Go win the gold medal.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that just struck me was how cool and collected he was under the basket. And I don't know if that was a form of shock or what, but he just seemed like you're saying, he seemed like, even though he was injured, it wasn't something that really bothered him. You know, for me, I'm thinking, man, I would be wiggling under the basket and, you know, you'd have to hold me down from just going crazy. But he seemed to take it in stride, which I know that really wasn't the case, but he's doing a great job and showing that, you know, the reason why he's one of the better players in the NBA and, you know, taking that amount of pain, you know, I don't know, man. I wish him the best and a speedy recovery.
Sure brings into question whether or not these professional athletes should be taking these extracurricular activities.
Well, of course, Mark Cuban stepped in and, you know, gave his thoughts on, you know, what the players do and how they prepare and how they get very little as far as money is concerned. So from a business standpoint, Mark Cuban took a stance, and I don't know if it was that was actually the time or the place to do it, but he did it. And, you know, he does make some valid points. But what I'm more concerned about is the health and the preparation, the time and energy that these players put in. Because, again, if we don't talk about, or if a player decides that they don't want to play, like Kobe, LeBron, Carmelo aren't in there, you know, you start to talk about them and say, hey, you know, why aren't you representing your country? Why aren't you doing this? And then you have a guy like Paul George that gives 110% and shows that he is dedicated into, you know, doing what it takes to be, you know, an upstanding person, a great basketball player, and then this happens. It's just terrible. It's a terrible thing to happen.
And really, unfortunately, injuries are a part of professional sports at all levels. You're seeing that big time in the NFL in training camps, especially down in San Francisco, where there's being hit with a barrage of injuries. And there's not really a lot you can do to prevent them any more than the safety measures that are already in place.
Well, in the NFL's case, as you're talking, you know, there's always that talk of taking away 4 preseason games and dwindling it down to 2, and maybe adding an extra 2 regular season games to keep the length of the season intact. All these things will constantly come up. There'll always be adjustments. You know, I'm just looking forward to the day to where there's more of a concentration. And there is, Sean. There is a concentration of, you know, making sure that the players are healthy, that the players are doing, you know, everything that they can to stay healthy. I just think that we can do a little bit more.
Well, Sean, in terms of the NFL, we'll have week 1 of the preseason getting underway this end of the week and the weekend. And we'll have a little bit of NFL talk next Monday night with how some teams did and some of the players that might be on the bubble trying to make some rosters.
Yeah, these guys are playing their hearts out in training camp. And, you know, you see a few of the teams, if you've been watching and, you know, watching training camp live, a few of these guys are chomping at the bit, you know, starting to fight amongst each other, looking forward to that first game. And, of course, we had the Hall of Fame game this past weekend. As you're mentioning, Sean Wally, there's a whole slate coming up this Saturday and Sunday. I personally will be watching my beloved Raiders and seeing what that looks like, what the organization looks like with the vast changes that have been going on in the offseason. Of course, there's some great optimism that's coming from the Raider Nation. And again, I look forward to seeing what that looks like this weekend.
Before we get out of here, Sean, we have to send a congratulations to all of the new Hall of Fame inductees in the National Football League, especially down there in your end, Ray Guy, the first punter in the Hall, and the best left tackle in all the land, Walter Jones of the Seahawks.
Definitely. You know, these guys deserved every bit of the honors that they received. And I believe Walter Jones was the first offensive tackle to make the Pro Bowl for Seattle. I think that's one of the accolades that he's had. And he had an awesome career playing with the Seahawks. And, of course, you had mentioned Ray Guy. I mean, what else can you say? The first punter to make it into the Hall of Fame. And as he said so gracefully that, you know, now the hall is complete, you know, by having the first punter. And this guy could boom some kicks. I mean, back in the day, the ball, he was the one that, the reason why they invented hang time, because the ball would hang so high. And, of course, he was a first-round pick, I believe, in 1973. And so, again, congratulations to Walter Jones, offensive tackle for the Hawks, and Ray Guy, punter for the Oakland Raiders. Of course, next year there'll be some more inductees. And, you know, I'm just hoping, Sean Wally, that, you know, Tim Brown gets his chance. I can't even begin to tell you about Jim Plunkett and Tom Flores. I don't know how you can have two players that win two Super Bowls and not be in the hall just yet. But I'm sure that the hall will rectify the situation and give these guys their due, not to mention Cliff Branch as well. But list goes on and on for the Raider Nation.
Man, Sean, I don't know if you had a chance to see the speeches, but wow, Aeneas Williams, what an amazing guy, a great guy to follow after, and a great mentor. He's a pastor now after his career.
Yeah.
Just an awesome family man, appears to be doing all the right things, at least in front of the camera, no reason to think otherwise. And man, if I was coming up after him, which I think was Walter and Ray Guy, I would have said, now for my speech, here's Aeneas Williams and let him handle it.
Well, obviously he is made for that. As you're saying, he's, you know, being a pastor, and, you know, he brought that speech. That speech was an actual message. It felt like a spiritual message that was being given, the energy that he brought to the stadium and how he got everybody involved on the left side of the stadium and the right side of the stadium. And, you know, it was just exciting. It was exciting for him. It was an exciting time for his family. I thought that was one of the better speeches of the night. Of course, Michael Strahan, you can't say enough about him and his energy that he brings. And he's a comical guy. You're looking at a defensive end, and he has a funny bone to him. And of course, I enjoyed all of the speeches, but those two guys definitely stuck out for me as well.
Sean Boyd, 64 shows in the books. Next week, we'll come back with 65, huh?
Well, I'll take a page from Aeneas, and Tilly Delay is coming and the creek don't rise. It's an old spiritual saying there, but yeah, we'll definitely be back with show number 65. In tonight's guest, John White Jr. of Global Basketball and Greg Talbot of KNDU. It's been a great show, Sean. Show number 65 coming up. Give us a teaser for next week.
Hey, what can we say? More baseball, more football, hopefully no more injuries in basketball, and of course football too. More big-time guests. We can't reveal them quite yet. Got to keep you in suspense. And we'll definitely talk to you next Monday night for show 65. That's my man, Sean Boyd. I'm Sean Wally. This is On the Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.